This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Jackie Moore. Give me that look. That's right. Let's go swim.
You're now entering Place to Be Nation Sports Lounge.
I'm talking swamp sweating. Let's fill the bathtub full of sweat.
Hello, folks. Welcome to this week's edition of the Sports Lounge. I'm your host, the Cowboy. Cowboy, I just dropped my drink. If you heard that, I apologize. But lounge is hopping tonight. A lot of the regulars aren't here, though. Your host, the Cowboy, is the only regular in the house. We're taping this at about 10 o'clock on a rockin' Friday evening. Anytime after 9 on a Friday evening, Keith's unavailable, so he couldn't make it. And Senior, everybody loves Senior. Senior, if you're not Facebook friends with him and haven't seen the 150 pictures he's put up, is enjoying himself in Disney World, currently at Epcot Center watching Illuminations. A little bit of a different atmosphere than the lounge, but he couldn't make it. But sends his regards, and you know, you can get his thoughts on the subject that we're going to dive into first by following him at @VogelHill. He's been very vocal this week, defending Tom Brady's honor, defending the Patriots. Senior's a noted Brett Favre hater. He's hated Brett Favre as long as I've known him, and after Favre came out in quasi support of Tom. Senior took the time to thank Mr. Favre via Twitter, so that was fantastic. But, you know, no Senior, no Keith. Flanagan's been MIA for a couple of months. I don't know what's going on with him. He may be born again or something. Can't come in here and see the ladies anymore. So you're probably thinking, no, maybe it's the Cowboy by himself, and I'm just going to turn this off. But no. We have a special guest. My good friend and key member here at Place to Be Nation, the one, the only, JT Rosero. How's it going, Justin?
Gotta wonder. Cowboy Senior's eating a Red Robin tonight, having a little burger, enjoying himself. Gonna have a good time down in Orlando. I thought you were going all Mike Francesa on me, by the way. I thought you were gonna do like the first 20 minutes solo. So it sounded like you were setting up for that.
I do love the sound of my own voice, yes, but. Nice. To try to always do a little monologue. It's the listeners are used to it.
I'm not riding your hog. We're fine.
Yeah, get off my hog, sir. Right. They're really tuning in to hear the Cowboy, so gotta give him as much Cowboy as they can handle.
Just here for the ride.
So Justin, big week, big week in news. Biggest thing in the news.
We're gonna give the Flanagan Court update later. Is that part of this? The 5 minute update each week's game. Is that part of this show?
Well, I didn't play this week.
No,
okay. So
we don't want to talk about it. Doesn't matter.
Justin took a tough loss in a game that they characterized as the Dust Bowl because
awful. I am still coughing up dust from that game. My sides are still killing from the 45 minutes of pregame sweeping I had to do.
It's a tough job, but somebody has to do it.
Someone's gonna beat
it. It's a really a misstep by Flanagan to allow all that seeding dirt to be dumped right in the middle of the court the day before the game.
Well, it's amazing we got the game in. Because the week seemed cursed. We were supposed to play Monday. We had all the kerfuffle with Garnett and Machado and everything else. We had to reschedule, get to Wednesday, and then, we rescheduled for Wednesday. Andy texted me on Tuesday with a picture of the mound of dirt and then everything else. So, but you'll have to see some of the changes. They really cut back all that crap that was behind the court, and his lovely mother built us a little area out of pavers to store the hoop. So we're moving in full time, apparently. We're not leaving.
It's good. Do you think we could possibly extend the inbounds now into the woods so I can shoot from even further away?
If you want to step in dirt, in just mounds of dirt, then you are welcome to.
So, but, we play basketball once a week for the last couple of years. And got a few guys out there.
You've been playing for the last couple of years. We've actually been playing for about 7 years now.
Yeah. So they were playing some other form of the game, and then a couple of years, the Cowboy stepped
Now we
call it basketball.
Yeah.
And we got a couple of guys out.
Skills challenge.
Got a couple of guys out there that are. It's like dealing with the diva wide receivers. We got a bunch of Terrell Owens out there. So Justin is nice enough to organize that, and I get to witness him on a weekly basis, just beating his head against the desk at our place of employment in frustration at what these guys put him through. So hopefully, I'm not one of those guys, Justin. I try to be agreeable.
Well, it's a good segue, so we can talk about the difficulties of being a league commissioner. No love. It's all hassle all the time. No matter what you do is the wrong answer. No matter what the teams are the wrong way. No matter what night we play is not right. If we start at 5:30, but it's really 5:45, we get bitched. It's a thankless job.
Absolutely, and there is a Goodell comparison there where, when I started playing, I do a thing where I'm a little guy. You listeners haven't seen the Cowboy in person. I'm not a big guy. I'm a point guard and shoot a lot of three-pointers, which are two-pointers out there. And Commissioner Rosero, it was the second or third game I ever played, and my team won because I hit a bunch of twos. Posed the question about 15 minutes after the game, maybe we should change that rule.
Well,
maybe we should change that rule because it...
It wasn't me. It was driven by senior members of the league. Were asked to, came to the competition committee, asked to review the rule. We put it to a vote. It was voted down, and it's fine. I don't see what the problem is.
No problem.
Get caught cheating.
So as Justin said, this is a good segue. Of course, what he is... referring to Deflategate, punishments handed down in the last week. Brady slapped with a heinously aggressive 4-game suspension as a first offender with zero prior incidents. The Patriots as a team docked $1 million. So collectively bargained, I believe, that the maximum fine is $500,000, but they were docked $500,000 each for two different infractions. And then also a first and fourth round pick in a gross abuse of authority by the NFL, arbitrary punishment by the NFL.
Gross abuse of the rules.
Something that we've grown accustomed to is of a... as I've stated, and I don't know if I said this on Twitter or just I feel like I talk about this a lot. This is it's just the league system of doing this is fundamentally broken.
And
so
I feel like I can just explain my position in one sentence here. That's why you shouldn't fuck with the rules, because you're part of a league that has proven themselves. No pun intended. To be cowboy when it comes to punishment, to do what they want, to be arbitrary, to if they get pissed off in one direction, it may be worse, and they make up the rules as they go. So why even risk it for something that I've been beaten over my head with and been told that it doesn't even matter? Oh, what's 2 PSI and deflating the ball? I mean, everyone's, my favorite Facebook posts over and over were, oh, Ray Rice hit his wife, it's 2 games, but deflating a ball is 4? I don't get it. Like, that's... No, idiot. You obviously don't understand exactly what's going on, because that has nothing to do with that. But if deflating a ball is so, meaningless in the long run, it doesn't mean anything, doesn't affect the game, didn't help them, then why take the risk of blatantly going against the rule when you know the punishment could vary based on the feelings of this, maverick from day to day?
And I think there's a measure of truth to that. Justin.
Risk-reward, was it really worth the risk to have the balls deflated a little bit for the potential reward of what? I don't know. Was it that big of a help? Maybe it was.
So my, I'd love to mention my favorite Facebook posts. All came from one individual who I would love to have on here someday, but he shall remain nameless, but... you know, in the Ray Rice versus Tom Brady argument, and it's a stupid argument. It definitely is a stupid argument. I think highlights what is wrong with the NFL when it comes to this stuff. And I don't know if you'll agree with me or not, Justin, but I equate this to like let's look at the not to bring up another Patriot issue, but Aaron Hernandez, right?
Mm-hmm.
You knew going in that if Aaron Hernandez was convicted of first degree murder, he was going to spend the rest of his life in jail, right? So a lot of attention is paid to the process, to the figuring out guilt or innocence. In the NFL, it's ass backwards, right? So, you know, take Ray Rice, guilty as sin on video. Well, then we talk for weeks in taut anticipation of what's the punishment going to be. Josh Gordon, another good example. What's it going to be? What's it going to be? And then we talk for weeks afterwards about, well, it was too light, it was too heavy, or if it's too light, like Ray Rice, well, we're gonna backtrack. And we're gonna say, yeah, you're right, it's too light. So you know, we're gonna take two games and make it a whole season. And it's a ridiculous way of doling out punishment for the most lucrative. I mean, the NFL, you could make the case is the biggest deal, right? The biggest, you know, the biggest story or the biggest generator, biggest mm-hmm. story generator, biggest deal in the country, not even in sports, but in the whole country. And for them to, you know, like for example, if there's a punishment for deflating the balls or something of that ilk, once the team is found "quote unquote guilty, more probable than not, whatever standard they have." Well, then the punishment phase shouldn't be the story, right? I mean, it should just be okay, they're guilty. Here's the punishment. Instead, it's absurd. The whole thing's absurd. I mean, if you look at the punishments for other infractions versus this, I mean, I think the punishment's way out of bounds. Way out of bounds.
See, my issue with even bringing the Rice thing in, which a lot of people are doing, is that the world has really changed since then, right? And I think the NFL is struggling because so much of this is new for them. Like, for years, they could just get away with whatever. And all of a sudden, all this is piled up. So the concussion stuff, you know, these infractions are building, the investigations. And I think they're struggling in this new social media, you know, more than even 24/7 news cycle with all these sports channels, with all this accountability. And we see it in a lot of places. We see it with journalists and websites and people that used to get by with being able to say and get away with whatever they wanted without being fact-checked or corrected are now struggling. And I think the NFL is in the same position. So before, they could kind of, you know, bury things and get away with different things. And didn't have that level of accountability and didn't have that peer pressure. I mean, thinking, you know, even back to like Leonard Little and stuff like that. And people were kind of upset about it and made jokes about it. But, you know, there wasn't that public pressure that builds now with just the way things are and the way society is today. And I'm not saying that's good or bad. I'm just saying that's how it is. So they're struggling, I think, to adapt to that. And we saw that with Ray Rice, where they thought they could get away with the two game, kind of bury it, figure it out. And that didn't work because the way the news cycle works and the way everyone, you know, once the video came out and they realized that the league was full of shit and they had to overhaul their whole domestic violence policy and penalties and all that. So I think it's a living, breathing thing for them right now. And that's why I think it's stupid to compare this to Rice, because their policy on, you know, domestic violence and all that has changed. I mean, we saw with Greg Hardy. So a lot of it has changed with, you know, since Ray Rice. So I feel like picking that because it's so fresh in our mind isn't really a fair comparison, because the penalties have gotten more strict now since the Rice thing. So we're in this new world where it's hard to compare the penalty now, you know, to the penalties of the past, like anything, like any sport. Like, you're not going to compare, you know, penalties or things that happened in 2010 versus 1982. So, I mean, I think we just need to look at it that, you know what, 2014 was a shit year for the NFL. A lot went wrong, but they acted and changed a lot to cover for those deficiencies. That makes sense?
Right. No, we're not
in the same world that we were in a
year
ago.
Oh, no, Justin, I completely agree with you. And I mean, I was going to say that, you know, the Ray Rice thing, as heinous as it was, at the very least, you know, even with the, you know, the gross underreaction followed by what was probably a gross overreaction, well, now there's a, you know, what was bred out of that is that now there are set punishments for that. Right, six weeks or ten weeks, yep. Right, and so now you know if you beat up your wife, you're gonna get a minimum of 6 games, right, and that's that, and I think that is absolutely a step in the right direction, and you know for drugs that's already there, so you know the same people who say. You know, you gave Rice 2 and you're only giving Brady 4. Well, you don't hear them say you gave Josh Gordon a year for smoking weed,
right,
and only exactly. gave Brady 4 games for deflating a football, right? And it's the same in essence, it's the same argument, right? Just spun the other way. And the reason Josh Gordon got the year is because it was collectively bargained that was the punishment. Mm-hmm. And even with the, you know, with society's changing feelings about marijuana, it didn't matter because that was the rule. The Brady thing falls into this gray area where there really isn't a standard, right?
And well, there is. There is, because there is a rule in the rule book with the fine and the penalty actually laid out for this. And that's why I think people were, you know, the more intelligent ones, we're understanding that the 4 games definitely was overkill. That 4 was probably too much, because what you're hearing is that he got 2 games for basically obstructing the investigation and refusing to cooperate. The Patriots got the extra fine and the draft picks for doing the same thing. And the fines for the actual deflation were not really anything ever too substantial based on the rule book. And the fact that they, you know, lied, covered it up, were found to be guilty, and then refused to cooperate, or where all these additional penalties are coming from. So I do think it is laid out in the rule book, this, you know, what this penalty should have been for this infraction. And I think they got porked by a couple things. One was the Pats coming out so defiantly and denying it. And, you know, it you know, you can go back to our show here in February, whenever it was, when I was on, and, you know, other people not really buying the story. Because Tom Brady sounded shaky in his thing, and then they were all really defiant, and you know, I just assumed the league would, you know, shuffle along because it was the Patriots and move, you know, just move along and forget about it. But I think the fact that it was pressed by the other owners and that it, you know, it was kind of too many unanswered questions. But what also screwed them was the leak that this was going on. Whoever leaked that out into the news cycle put the NFL in a tough spot to where now the investigation was completely out in the open. If you go back to Bountygate, do you remember we didn't hear anything about that until the investigation report came out and everything was all of a sudden in the news and the suspensions and all that stuff was out. And I think that's what would have happened here if the news didn't get leaked about what had happened in the AFC Championship game. I do think it was a sting, but not in a bad way. I just think that they were tipped off and they were put in position that they were going to test the balls. And I think if they came back underinflated, which they did, they were going to run an investigation. And everything was going to be kept quiet until it came out. And I think whoever leaked it, and that's where things got out of hand. That's when it became a big story, and it kind of screwed things up for the league. I don't think it would have been as big a deal. I don't think I just don't think it would have been blown up as much. I don't think you would have gotten Brady and the Patriots really kind of fighting it, because I don't think the investigation would have been as intense or in-depth. I think they just would have looked into the situation. They would have talked to the Pats. They would have just said, you know, came out later and said, oh, you know, we found 2 of the balls were underinflated in this one game. They wouldn't have had all the text to go back to the other games. So they would have paid the fine and moved on. I think the fact that it got leaked out and it became such public knowledge put the pressure on, and then the Patriots being so defiant publicly kind of put them in a position to have to go into this in-depth investigation.
Yeah, I mean, and therein lies the problem. So, I mean, in essence, what you're saying is because it blew up in the media, the NFL increased their punishment.
No, I don't think it increased the punishment. I think it forced the investigation to be in the public eye. and it made it a bigger deal than it would have been if it could have just been kept under wraps, investigated. It may not have gotten as big because maybe the Patriots don't defiantly come out to defend themselves in the week after the Super Bowl. You know what I'm saying? Like, it may not have had to get to the point it got to. It could have just been, we looked into it, two of these balls are underinflated, and we investigated, we found out this guy went to the bathroom and did it, whatever. You know, I don't think the world wouldn't have known as much about it, and it wouldn't have maybe influenced the direction of what it went. I don't know if it did. It may have been the same. But I'm just going by Bountygate, which was the same thing, only we didn't know anything about it until we found out the report was out.
And I mean, I think, I mean, I firmly believe that the punishment was influenced by public perception, by what the NFL's view of how this was being looked at.
I think they were pissed at a couple things. I think they were pissed. I mean, I'll take this slant. I don't think it was influenced by the public. I think it was maybe influenced by being angry at the Patriots for wagging their finger, doing the Palmeiro, right, going public, and then I think influenced by, fuck, guys, come on, you know, again, like they're back again, multi-time offenders, and I think they were pissed about, you know, Brady, right or wrong, not wanting to turn over his text messages, and I don't blame the guy. I wouldn't have handed my phone either, but that doesn't mean, you know, I keep seeing these people with these takes saying, oh, well, they don't have the proof. I wouldn't turn over my phone if I were Brady, but then that means they don't have the proof. Well, if he doesn't turn his phone over and there is, you know, on his phone could exonerate him, but he doesn't turn it over, how can they use that as any kind of proof? So you can only act by the evidence you have in your hand. So if he's not willing to give that over, I think as an investigator, you have to assume one of two things. Either, all right, you're blocking the investigation, I'll go on with what I have. But in my past experience, and this is what Wells has said, in his past experience, the only one time one guy refused to turn his phone over ended up being like involved in some major corruption sting. So I think just in his inherent, you know, history as a lawyer or whatever, just assumed, may not assume guilt, but assume that he's hiding something if he refused to turn it over.
One of the things I don't understand, and maybe you can clear it up for me, is they have the other guy's phones, right, and they have the texts from Brady on the other guy's phones. Mm-hmm. So what? And the way that it, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but the way that it was described by not in the report,
right,
but by Wells when he came out this week and defended himself was, we didn't ask for the phone, we just asked for transcripts of the text messages that were pertinent.
Right.
Now, wouldn't those be the same text messages they already have?
Not necessarily, because they might have been looking deeper at the team. Right, so they may have thought, well, there may be some between Brady and these guys, but are there any between Brady and Belichick or Brady and, you know, whoever that would implicate even further that this is a longstanding thing? Or I think maybe they were looking to see if there's anything deeper. That would be my guess.
Yeah, it's a little weak. The
I don't think it's weak. I think if you're investigating an issue and like, hey, this guy's been texting these guys, is maybe he's texting other people. I don't think it's weak to want to look into those text messages to see what.
No, I mean, I think I prefer, again, if like you said, I wouldn't give my phone either. And
no, but I mean,
unless it was, especially someone in the position of, you know, of Tom Brady with, you know, his.
But if
his
it wasn't the whole phone, if it wasn't the whole phone, and it was only text pertinent to that, then, I mean, you basically, he's kind of admitting guilt in a way, right? Because if you're going to say, look, go through it quick. Or do a scan, however you want to do it. My lawyers will go through it, and they'll see there's nothing there. And we tried to scan, we tried to give you anything pertinent to it, there's nothing there. Instead, he's refusing to even participate, which to me says there has to be something in there that he doesn't want them to see. Now, if they said you have to hand over your full phone to me, then I'd say, fuck no. No way. But what came out later is that they weren't requesting his phone. They were just requesting anything pertinent to that. So there isn't. And from what the report says, Brady didn't say there's nothing pertinent. He just said, I'm not participating. So there's got to be something in there, right?
Well, you know, I mean, they could have. I mean, who determines what's pertinent?
Well,
anything Brady
about deflating balls, I would say.
No, I mean, but what I mean is Brady hands over the text just to those two guys that they already have and says, here's what's in my phone that's pertinent.
Right, I mean, or his lawyer has. I'm sure there's some arbitrator that has to go through and find it, I guess. So maybe right. That's why you don't want them to say. I don't know. I'm sure there's a way they can scan the records for it.
So that would be That would be my thought. Is, I mean, regardless of, I can't imagine that it would just be like, hey, we trust you. Give us what's pertinent.
No, there's going to be someone that's going to run a scan. There must be some way to, look, I'm sure right now if I called AT&T and I had a warrant for your text messages, they could scan and see what the hell you've been sending. So, I mean, I there's got to be a way beyond just giving it to Ted Wells and he's flipping through Brady's, you know, iPhone, looking at everything he has. There's got to be a way they can do a word search. I am sure there's a way they can scan for it. I mean, you and I both know that's possible with a lot of things. So I'm sure there's some way they could scan the device or search to see, you know, things that are pertinent to just to that.
Yeah. I mean, I can understand from his perspective if it's anyone but him or his lawyer with that phone, or with the records of that phone, I mean, I wouldn't do it.
I think it would be his lawyer. My belief would be it would have to be an agreement with his lawyer and his law firm to go through the text and print and provide them as evidence. That would be my, I'm guessing that's what it would be, but I have no idea.
Next point. So I think one of the reasons the Patriots came out so defiantly, right, when they, everybody knows I am a Patriots fan, so we'll get that out of the way, but and Justin is not. But when they came out the week before the Super Bowl beating their chest so defiantly, my thought was they have to know. They have to know this is bullshit, or that there's nothing tying them to this. Otherwise, they wouldn't do this. And in retrospect, I think they were relying on that on the scientific evidence that they had. And as everyone knows, they put the Goldberg, I believe his name is, the lawyer for the Pats, put out the started the website WellsReportContext.com, where they do kind of a line by line rebuttal of the report. And there's one part in there that everybody's harped on that I agree is ridiculous. Oh. And I don't know how anyone with half a brain in their head would put that, even if it's true. I don't know how anyone would put.
I think it hurts the overall believability of the whole thing. It's like, if you're willing to, why, if you have great, you know, other great evidence or great takedowns in this thing, why would you even include that nonsense? I mean, no one's going to believe that. And I don't care if there's another text that he was deflating. I mean, come on. The guy was busted deflating balls, and his nickname's a deflator.
I agree. I mean, my guess, I mean, would be that these guys, that's what these guys said, right? But true or not, my guess would be that that's what these guys said it meant, and they put it in there. And to your point, it's a huge document, and if you read it, there's a lot of good information in there that makes you think, but it's been undermined by everybody. Rightly so, because of how stupid of a comment it is, talking about the deflator being a weight loss method.
All the stuff with the needles, too. How going to get a needle was because a lot of times you'd only have one needle, and he had to go back and forth between the rooms to get the needle. It's like, come on.
The science part of it was what I'd like to talk about. And I'm not a scientist. I'll be the first. I'm clearly not a scientist. But I mean, just like an abridged version, the Patriots, I think another reason the NFL came down so hard on them is because, you know, they're talking about institutional failure. Mm-hmm. And if they don't if it's not all on the Patriots, there was some institutional failure on the NFL's part in this whole thing, right? So, and I don't know how you won't agree with this. So they're tipped off before the game. You said yourself, sting operation.
Oh yeah, I think they definitely were. They knew going into that game that they had a
loss. Yeah, they said they did.
Yeah.
And the ref tests all the balls before the game, right?
Yep.
All and then abridged version, the Patriots balls are all at 12.5, the Colts balls are all at 13, right? Then they test him again at halftime. They use two different needles that are given two different readings with it. I mean, like a half a pound of pressure apart. And the ref Walt Anderson, who tested him at the beginning of the game, one, like, didn't write anything down. Two, said he thinks it was the logo pressure gauge. There's a pressure gauge with a logo and one that doesn't have one, evidently. But he's not sure. And the one that doesn't have the pressure gauge is reading a half a pound lighter than the one with the pressure – with the logo. I'm sorry. The one without the logo is reading a half a pound lighter. So, I mean, based on what the rebuttal in the report says, if you use – you know, if Walt Anderson's correct that he was – that he used the logo gauge and – with the readings for the logo gauge from before, from pregame to halftime, that the ball's deflated within that gas theory index. I mean, to me, that's regardless. I can see why the Patriots would come out beating their chest, because to me, that is a more solid piece of evidence.
Wasn't that disproven though by the test in whatever it was, a Stanford or whatever college did the test as part of the Wells report?
They had a Nobel Prize winning scientist provided that to the Patriots, the gas theory. Well,
a recreation or part of the Wells report was they went
okay,
to some
Justin,
college.
Justin, then why were the Colts balls all?
I don't know. Don't look at me. I'm not the student or whoever said it. I'm telling you what the Wells report did. They went and they ran tests. So I'm just saying. Look, I don't understand the science behind it. I don't really care enough to understand the science behind it. All I'm saying is you got one side, one group of scientists saying there's no way this could have happened or whatever, and then you got this other guy saying there could have. I don't know. Maybe he's a Pats fan. Maybe he's not. Maybe he's a Jets guy in the league office setting them all up.
No, I don't think that. It just seems like it was shoddy. Like if you were really doing a sting operation –
Oh, they fucked
it up. They seem to not really – I mean, like they kind of were very laissez-faire about it.
All right, let me ask you this, Raj. So, O.J. Simpson, right? Do you believe he killed Nicole Brown?
I don't know where you're going with this.
Do you believe he killed Nicole Brown Simpson?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So, the investigation completely fucked up, right? And he got off. Does that mean he's not guilty? That there's not a ton of evidence pointing towards him having done this? But the glove didn't fit for whatever reason. Maybe it was dried incorrectly and it wasn't his glove. Whatever the reasoning was. They built the case around the glove and it didn't fit him.
Justin, that's not a fair comparison.
It is a fair comparison, because the overarching.
I mean, you think
my overarching comparison is just because the investigation or the sting operation was botched badly by incompetent people running it doesn't negate the fact that the attempt at cheating or breaking the law didn't occur. So yes, they are just as guilty, but it's their fucking league. If your boss fuck something up, and we're not talking me and you, let's use Jason Greenhouse. Jason Greenhouse's boss fucks something up, and he's on his team, and he fucks up too. But the boss isn't going to take the heat because he looked into it and said, you know what, Jason, you could have caught this for me, or you fucked it up and I missed it, but oh well, I'm the boss. It is the league. So regardless of whether they fucked up or not, they don't have to take accountability. They're not losing their millions and billions of dollars. You're not going to stop watching football. And neither of all everyone else is doing fantasy and everything else. There is no accountability for them because it's their league. Now, if the Patriots want to disband and go start their own league to say, fuck you, you botched this and now you cost us $1 million in draft pick, then go ahead. But I think trying to point the finger at the league botching the investigation is really just trying to say, hey, look over there while I steal this donut. I mean, it's not.
I think the league's handling of the investigation.
No, because there's enough
is a big factor in
I don't think
in
so. There's enough smoke. Well, yeah, the punishment doesn't matter because it's their punishment. They can do what they want.
And honestly, the findings. Because if Wells doesn't find, I mean, again,
Wells found the text. To me, the texts are not even from this game. The texts are not even from this game between McNally and Yaz over there. They were from the Jets and the Bears games that proved that this happened more than just once, and that's why they did this thing in the Colts game.
The Jets game, they talked about the balls being overinflated because they were
right.
I think that's completely impertinent, right? I mean, that's I don't know. You know, it's just
the deflator said Brady was not happy with the ball, so we better get him to where he likes him. Then they bitch about Tom. And they talk about how he's giving them goods.
Well, because the ball was above the threshold. I mean, that's how you can look at that. To me, I mean, you make the O.J. Simpson comparison. I mean, there was overwhelming physical evidence of O.J. Simpson's guilt. I mean, he was clearly guilty.
You're misrepresenting my point. My point was just that you shouldn't – to me, you shouldn't blame – you can't say because the investigator fucked up that doesn't mean the guy's not guilty, I guess is what I'm trying to say. You're trying to say they botched the sting, which is probably accurate. But to me, there's enough other stuff there to say there's enough smoke here and there's probably some fire. Like, why were they tipped off in the first place? Someone knew something. And to me, between the texts, the fact that other teams tipped them off to it and said they've been doing it for years, I mean, come on. To me, there's enough there to implicate that they were doing something, which brings me back to my whole overarching theory on this, is that the week after the Super Bowl, they should have come out and said, in the past week, we handled an internal investigation. We talked to Tom Brady. We talked to our clubhouse guys. And they said, hey, you know what? Back earlier in the season, there was a couple games where the referees overinflated the balls. We were not, you know, Brady was not happy. His performance suffered. And he told them, hey, guys, do you mind making sure the balls are where I like them? It was a misunderstanding for this game. They took the inflation down a little bit. And, you know, we fucked up. We're taking accountability. We'll eat the fine and move on. And this would have not even been a story any further because they were coming off the Super Bowl. The league was not going to want to trash their champions, trash their one of their poster boys in Tom Brady. And I really think it would have gone away. You would have had just, you know, haters coming out and bitching about it. But whatever, that happens all the time and everything, and it goes away. To me, they prolonged it by taking the approach that we've seen doesn't make sense. Roger Clemens did this for years, and what happened? No one believed him in the end. Everyone still believes he cheated, and he's still sitting there wagging his finger, denying the obvious. So we've been proven over the last 10 years of scandals, the best way to get through these things is just to own it and move on. And no one would have said anything. They wouldn't have said, they just would have said, well, it was still 45-0, or whatever the health score was. They obviously weren't. It didn't affect the game, which is what everyone was saying anyway. But the fact that they wagged the finger and puffed their chest and, you know, Kraft demanded the apology and everything else, instead of just taking it, saying, hey, you know what? Even if we did cheat and get caught, fuck it. We just won the Super Bowl. Let's just move on. Why do we want to drag this out? Why do we want that any further? They didn't care back in Spygate that all their other Super Bowls have an asterisk. Do you give a shit? No. So why even bother? Why even bother opening your books and inviting the investigation, inviting anything else on, when they easily just could have just said, you know what? Hey, guys, we probably fucked up, but if we can just get away with a fine, let's just move on. Like, why have the balls and the arrogance to try and shake it off?
Well, I mean, there's one possible answer would be that he didn't deflate the balls in the bathroom. Right. I mean, for them to come out and admit guilt, I mean, there's a big difference between admitting.
You don't even have to admit it. You can sneakily admit it. Like I just said, you own it and say we fucked up. We didn't intend to do what we did. I'm telling you, there's no way it gets this far. If they even come out and just say that, there's no way.
The first question is, did you deflate the balls after they were checked by the refs? Because that, I mean, that's brazen cheating. It really is. You know, the refs inspect something.
Yeah, but the letter of the law in the rule book is the $100,000 fine. Yeah, okay, we did it because we got screwed earlier in the season. And we felt we were unfairly hosed in the Jets game. The ball was overinflated, and we're taking matters into our own hands. We should have gone about it a different way. Okay, rule book says fine is between 25 and 100 grand. Here you go. It doesn't get this far. So. There's no investigation to obstruct. There's nothing to withhold. It doesn't get this far. They don't dig back.
I agree. It doesn't get this far. Now, what I believe the net result of this is going to be another huge black eye for the NFL when they get beat in court, because anyone of sound mind knows that if this thing goes to court, it's going to go the same way as a true court doesn't give a shit about public opinion, about, you know, what the other owners think. They don't care. You know, they're going to. Like the Ray Rice and Adrian Peterson, when they had neutral arbiters or judges, right, throughout the suspensions, both of them. And that's what's going to happen here. I mean, he could pretty much die. I think he could take that to the bank.
Well, I'm curious what happens in the appeal, because can, you know, can Goodell, and I was reading the thing from Lester Munson today at ESPN, he thinks it's going to be upheld. Because he said, unless Brady now hands over his text messages, what has really changed? And he thinks the fact that Brady did it, was caught, and tried to cover it up and lied is enough for a 4-game suspension. So, I mean, that's from Troy Vincent, and that's...
Oh, I'm not talking about the appeal.
No, I know, but I'm curious about the appeal, because that's the first step. Right? I mean, if they go through the appeal and they reverse everything, I don't think they're going to go to court. Right.
Oh, clearly. Right. Goodell looks like a complete idiot for naming himself as the arbiter.
Well, to me, that means he's not going to reverse it.
No, I kind of wavered on this. When I saw that, my first thought was, I mean, because everybody thinks, right? Everybody thinks that punishment's not really from Troy Vincent, right?
Oh, yeah,
I mean, everybody thinks it came directly from Goodell. And I mean, I don't know that. But that's public opinion, and Goodell certainly seems to care about public opinion, but can't get out of his own way. So what does it look like if everybody thinks that you doled out the punishment, and now you're the arbiter, right? I mean, it's like a direct conflict of interest. And if he's gonna when I first saw it, I said there's no way in hell that he's gonna make himself the arbiter if he's just going to uphold the suspension because he's going to look like such an asshole. But the more I thought about it, the more – I mean he – just the punishment itself and the way he is, I mean the guy's – I mean he's a vindictive guy, right? Mm-hmm. And I think he is bullshit. The Patriots, completely bullshit, and that's reflected in the punishment.
Oh, yeah.
And I think he's bullshit enough at the Patriots that he's naming himself the arbiter just so that he can say, I'm upholding everything.
Oh, yeah.
And then it's going to go to court, and they're going to throw it out.
There's no way he's going to back...
They're going to throw it out.
Yeah. There's no way he's going to backtrack on what he did because it's going to make him look absolutely even stupider than he already does. So, I mean, he's not... If he backtracks, then he's saying, I'm an idiot and I was wrong. So, to me, that plus what you said, he's pissed off, tells me they're not changing it. Unless Brady flips the script on him and provides the text now and says, okay, look, I'm doing it now, then I think you would have to backtrack and just give him the 2 games. But
Brady's not doing that.
No, of course not. I think to me that's the only way they get around him reducing it without going to court. I think he's pissed. I think he's pissed because they came out and demanded the apology, wagged the finger. I think he's pissed that they trashed the guys in the office. They accused the whoever it is, the guy that's the one of the investigators that was an ex-Jets employee. They came out and, they gave his name and information out and gave that, put that doubt out there. Media members around here on the team were kind of hinting that when the report comes out, it may prove that the Colts had set them up and that they had deflated the... Like, I think they were mad that the Pats were going on this kind of scorched earth kind of thing and blaming everyone else. Blaming everyone else for what had happened and really throwing the league under the bus. And I think that's what really pissed off Goodell, that they went to these lengths to trash people in the front office, question the integrity of the office, which we all know is a joke anyway. But still, from their point of view, they're mad they're trashing their integrity. Then Kraft comes out, which I think has been the biggest douchebag move of all this, is that he backed Goodell and Wells. And now when the report comes out against them, all of a sudden Wells is on the take. His credibility comes into question. Goodell's being unfair, but with all the other past infractions, he's always backed Goodell. And I think there was even a story around the bounty gate thing where he's like, we believe in Roger and he's a great, he's a great commissioner. We stand by his decision, like all this stuff from Kraft talking about how great Goodell is. And it just reeks of like, yeah, we back you, but now, because you found this report against us, all of a sudden we're going to call your integrity into question. Like they didn't even fight it. Yes, Kraft came out, and they basically said, Wells is on the take. Wells is going to fine for the league.
So I think, when the report came out, Kraft trashed the report, which is within his, it's within his rights to defend the team, but he said we'll accept any punishment that the league doles out. I think he was just completely floored by the severity of the punishment.
Well, he shouldn't be, because he knows what a friggin' nut job Goodell is. He's his boy.
And that's why he backtracks. So, I mean, to your point, Justin, I think you can apply that. This story should not have a quarter of the legs that it's had, One, I agree with you that the Patriots certainly could have handled things differently at the beginning. Two, I think, you know, and you and I talked, and I talked on the lounge here, you know, my dad, senior, baby, you know, there's different camps on this thing. Senior's in the Brady's innocent camp, yeah. And, you know, and then you have guys like the guy I was arguing with on Facebook who said that, you know, he should get more games than Greg Hardy and Ray Rice because
they shouldn't even be in the same discussion. This is what bothers me. Like,
well, I think Hardy can be in the same discussion.
No, he didn't try and cheat.
Because it's, I mean, an integrity of the league kind of deal.
No,
right?
That's,
I mean,
integrity. To me, there's two things, right? There should be a delineation and punishment and rules and everything else. There should be personal conduct, which is ruled on a whole different plane. That is, you're a piece of shit, you beat your wife, you beat your kid, you're drunk, you know, drunk driving, you're smoking, whatever they want to categorize.
Criminal stuff.
Right. That's its own world. On the other side is things that directly affect the on-field game. To me, that's PEDs and rules infractions of any kind, whether it's Spygate, whether it's even with the Jets when the guy tripped the fucking guy. Like, all that stuff, to me, is in this world. So to even bring Rice or Hardy into it is asinine. And that's why those statuses and everything else were annoying me, because it's stupid to compare that versus this. Just because their domestic violence and personal conduct policy was all fucked up doesn't mean that Brady shouldn't, in theory, have gotten the amount of games he got for cheating on the field, if that's what they view as what it is. To me, it's a whole different world.
Right. And the argument I'm referring to was someone saying you should get more than Hardy's 10 games because Hardy was found, you know, because his girlfriend wouldn't talk, so they had to drop the charges, and that Janae Rice hit her head on the way down.
Yeah, no, none of that should ever be compared to this.
On both sides, right. On both sides.
No, I
agree. Yeah.
To me, this should only be compared to other on-field infractions. And to me, I don't care that the deflated balls probably didn't mean anything. My problem is that the attempted, if you did do it, attempted to alter the rules of play, attempted to cheat, and I don't care who it is, and I don't care what it was. I do think there has to be some punishment there if Brady was telling the guys to do it. I don't care that it was only deflating balls. I mean, if he's guilty and he still attempted to take a chance and, you know, cheat the game, and I'm not saying he should be suspended for a year or any of this stuff. I do think there has to be some personal penalty levied to him for trying to do that, if he did it.
Yep, I agree. And where I was going with that was, like you said, the Patriots could have handled it differently at the beginning and given the story less legs and made it less of a thing. The NFL, on the other end of it, I mean, I was on this show saying, I mean, again, Pats fan, after the report came out, but before the punishment was levied, and my take was, you know what, if you want to suspend Tom Brady for a game, go ahead. You know, I mean, the report finds that he was culpable. Kraft has come out. He blasted the report, but said he'll take, you know, the Patriots will take whatever punishment they get, yada, yada. If you wanted to suspend Tom Brady for a game, fine. But I think the league, by overreaching so much with the punishment,
yeah,
has now opened a huge can of worms for themselves.
But the punishment, because their way of writing it off is that, look, we were only gonna give Brady a game, and you were only gonna get a $25,000 fine. But then you didn't comply in the investigation. Then you lied. You tried to cover it up, and then Brady refused to hand over his text, and the Pats wouldn't make McNally available for that extra. And like, to me, that is what they're gonna lean on to say you obstructed our investigation. And to me, or to the league, that implies more guilt or whatever the reasoning is, and that's why your fines and suspensions were more. Like, that's what they're going to lean on.
Oh, so, I know that's what they're saying.
Yeah. Well, that's their rule.
I know,
man.
That's what they're saying, but at the end,
it's their
it's
world.
Not the, but
it doesn't
not
have to
their,
be fair.
But it's
I don't
not
have to think it's fair. You don't have to think it's fair. It's not fair. But they're playing in the league's world.
My point is that they fucked up.
Sure.
Because they could have given Brady whether they gave him one game or four games. You think if they came out and gave him and suspended him for the first game of the season and fined the Patriots $1 million, that you would have a huge outcry of the punishment wasn't severe enough? No. No, I think everybody would have felt that that was, you know, even someone, you know, like not necessarily like yourself, because you said you thought he should get suspended for a game. But someone like, you know, like the guy on Facebook or even the most ardent hater would have at least been happy that they suspended him, that they held Brady accountable. They suspended him. They punished the team.
Put the asterisks.
But by and I think the Patriots would have just ate that by overreaching with this ridiculous punishment. Now the end result is going to be you're going to have the appeal, and like we say, they're going to probably lose the appeal. It's going to end up in court. If it ends up in court, the league is definitely going to lose 100% because the evidence they have wouldn't hold up in court, and they don't. And the punishment isn't going to hold up in court. They reversed Peterson. Peterson didn't hold up in court.
Did A-Rod ever make it to court? Or did he back off?
A-Rod never made it to court, I don't believe. He just did punishment.
Yeah, because he was gonna. Then he didn't. This is one idea I've heard, and there may be some maybe credence to why the Pats refused that extra McNally interview, is that in one of a subsequent interview or finding after they last talked to McNally, they found something that further implicated the franchise. And, you know, this went deeper than what we know. And they said, fuck it. They were going to try to get McNally to flip, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And I think that is why they blocked him the last time. Not that I think that. This is what the theory is out there. That basically they found more information out, wanted to talk to him again, that they were going to hang over him to try and get him to flip or get a little bit more to maybe even levy more to say he runs deeper. And then the Pats said no. Where we'd rather just roll the dice with this and stop. And whatever, if there's a penalty for obstructing, there's a penalty, but we're not going to let this go any deeper.
So you think they're bluffing about court? I don't. It doesn't seem, I mean, I don't know why you would hire that guy if he doesn't plan on
I don't think they're bluffing about court.
Wouldn't that come out in some, I mean, I don't, I'm not a, again, not a, not not a lawyer.
I mean, if
but
a,
wouldn't
if
that a, come out in some sort of discovery type of deal?
Maybe, or, unless the judge looks at it up front and says, this is bullshit. I'm not even wasting time looking at this. We're throwing it out, you know? I don't know.
It seems like, to me, and the last thing, and to your point, you said this, Goodell is, I truly believe the guy's incompetent. I mean, I feel like we've had certain presidents in the United States that, like, I know, not even think, I hear the guy talk, and I know I'm smarter than the president of the United States, okay? But they'll remain nameless. We don't do political affiliations here.
Maybe we should get drunk, Scott, on.
But that's the feeling I have with Goodell, is that, I'm sitting here and Somerset, Massachusetts, and I can see what the end game of this is going to be. You can see, and I mean, maybe you feel the same way about the Patriots, the way they handled it from the beginning, but specifically the end. I mean, the NFL has had, I mean, it's time and time and time again. How many times do they have to look like morons and get their decisions overturned by
the machine rolls on? It's their world. That's what I keep saying. They don't give a fuck. It's their world. They can do what they want. They can arbitrarily rule shit. The money keeps rolling in, and had none of this. Not Ray. I think they're looking at this like, hey, we survived Ray Rice and Adrian Peterson and everything else, and this isn't going to stop us.
They didn't really survive those though, because the punishments they doled out got reversed.
But it didn't matter.
Peterson got paid for every single game.
But they
can
fuck up over and over, and there's no consequence to them, is what I'm saying.
Like, right,
Goodell's not going to get fired. You're not going to stop watching. The millions aren't going to stop rolling in. NBC is not going to stop paying $10 billion to have Sunday night games. None of it is going to stop. So what if there's no punishment and there's no recourse? Why is there a reason for them to fix what they're doing in any way?
To be somewhat anything, but anything. I mean, you got to
care.
Compare them to, I mean, they're huge, right? I mean, you compare them to any other large conglomerate, whether it's a country or another business, you can't just look at the 6 inches in front of your face, you know? A constant ineptitude and constant issues like this eventually
right.
are going to drive people
but
away.
But now you're talking a whole different – you are talking a whole different ballgame. So we're not talking about their business strategy. Like, I'm not defending their business strategy. I'm telling you from their point of view what they're thinking. And they're thinking we're infallible. Baseball, fuck off. All your old generation's dying kids don't care. Basketball, star-driven league. When you don't have a big name, it's not going to matter. Hockey, whatever. Not even a blip on our radar. Soccer, not in the U.S., pal. Sorry. We are the NFL. We're expanding. We got three teams coming to Los Angeles in the next 5 years. We're going to England. We can do whatever we want. Fantasy. The teams made up of players from our teams dominate the talk and gambling. I mean, they are not going away. So in their minds, they are infallible. They can do what they want. They can run, like I said before, a cowboy state. They can do as they please. And there's no accountability to it. Now, if they go to court, you know, and there's a finding against Goodell and it costs him money or whatever, defamation, you know, something like that, maybe they change. But right now, who cares if Adrian Peterson's thing gets, whatever. All right, well, we fucked up. We'll see you at the next one. I mean, they still survived those things. So to me, it's their world. Don't risk fucking up and having to go in front of a judge that's out of his mind. Play by the rules. You're putting yourself in this position because you know the judge is out of his mind.
So it sounds like the final days of WCW.
Right? I mean, you know your boss is an idiot, so don't do something stupid that could get you in trouble. I mean, that's really what it comes down to in my eyes. So to me, the Pats are guilty of just being, you know, brazen about it when you know this guy is nuts. And my thought is that Kraft know he has Goodell in his back pocket, that they're boys, and never thought he would do this to him. And that's probably why they came out so defiantly. Like
so,
you said.
That's another piece of this is that I think if it was I think this has come out a little bit is that the Patriots are widely kind of I don't want to say despised by the rest of the league, but there's kind of a feeling with the rest of the league that they've got this, they're getting what's coming to them, mm-hmm. sort of,
which is probably true.
And you know, Goodell, as good of friends as he is with Kraft. He's really, I mean, if he wants to stay in power, right, if he wants to stay and continue to be Eric Bischoff, he needs the support of all the owners, right? Mm-hmm. And I think if this was literally any other team in the league, it would be a situation where some of the other owners would say, well, if you can hang this guy out to dry, you can hang me out to dry. But I think in the case of the Patriots, probably the overwhelming majority is – go ahead and hang them out to dry. it's just a shoddy way for things to be run. Well, we agreed on this more than probably most people.
Well, one thing we didn't get to, I'm just going to throw it out. I don't really know. I haven't honestly studied all the numbers, but I've seen it printed many times. Since the rule changed or since the accusation began about the deflating of the balls, their fumble numbers, like, what was it 07 to 08? Their fumble numbers like went way down or something like that. And guys that have left, their fumbles have returned to normal. Like, was it Ben Jarvis Green Ellis? Like, never fumbled when he was with the Patriots, and then he fumbled a shitload of times in Cincinnati, whatever the numbers were. And there's some theories out there that they've been doing the deflated ball thing, not as much to help Brady, which, you know, that theory kind of flies in the face of this report. Why is Brady involved? But the idea behind it, too, is that it helps their players not fumble the ball, and that bears out in these numbers where they have, like, the lowest. You know, fumble rates are pretty random, and their fumbling is, like, super low compared to the league average or whatever. So, I mean, that's out there. I don't think we need to get into it. I haven't done enough looking at the numbers and all that. I don't know the official reasoning behind it, but I do know I've seen that thrown about. Their fumble numbers from, I think it was, like, 2008 on have been, like, it took an absurd cut in 08 and has stayed there. And guys that have left their system, their numbers go back up.
So, I mean, you throw that in right at the end, but... So, I mean, I think that's ridiculous.
Well, we'd have to look into it.
I mean, look at a guy like Stephen Ridley. Can't hold on to the ball. He doesn't play. If you fumble in New England, you don't play, even if you're the most talented guy in the field. So, they don't put up with that shit. I think that has something to do with it, too. Yeah. But does it suit your argument well, but... Do you think they gave Ridley got the only properly inflated ball?
I mean, he's just really fucking bad no matter how soft the ball is.
15 times a season. Well, we'll see.
The Green Ellis one is because
Green Ellis hadn't fumbled in high school, college, or the NFL.
Then he goes.
You can look that up. You can look that up. He literally had never fumbled in his whole football career, and then I mean, you know, you don't know what the Red Rifle. The Red Rifle might like the ball at 18 pounds. You know, he's got small hands. I think we agreed a little more than others might have thought, and it's a very, very good discussion. We didn't have like the two extreme sides of the issue here. So I'm going to ask you one question before we go to break. Do you feel personally? Do you feel with your knowledge as an analyst that the punishment that they received fit the crime? Do you think it was over the top and more severe than it should have been?
It really depends to me what the breakdown is, which I haven't seen them say, of what he got for cheating versus what he got for the cover-up. If they come out and say he got one game for cheating and the Pats got 50 grand or whatever, $100,000 for the deflation, but Brady got three games and the Pats got the, you know, the draft picks and everything, because they obstructed and they covered up the operation, lied, defied, and then refused to cooperate. I get it a bit more. Like, I'm still not agreeing that maybe it's 100% fair, but I can kind of get what they're saying. If they come out and say, nah, this is all because they cheated by doing this, I think it's way over the top. That makes sense?
Makes perfect sense, and thank you for your honesty. So, folks, I think we're going to do that. That was a full hour for
That's
everybody.
The best Deflategate discussion you're going to hear anywhere.
Absolutely. And it's here on the Sports Lounge. If you want the lowest common denominator, you can turn down the dial and head to the ice cream truck. But we'll be back. We have a little break. Justin, you're never here. So my lead-ins to the break are terrible. So why don't you do your thing?
All right. Why don't we take a minute? We're going to listen to what you can hear elsewhere on PlaceToBeNation.com. We've got the Kevin Kelly Show. There's a bunch of stuff on the Place to Be podcast feed, a bunch of stuff on the Pro Wrestling Only feed. We're going to check those out. We're going to come back. We're going to talk some NBA playoffs. We're going to talk a little baseball, even though the Yankees are getting killed tonight. I don't really want to discuss it, but we're going to do it, and then we will wrap things up. That's Roger. I'm Justin. We'll be right back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation, PlaceToBeNation.com, The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes at PlaceToBeNation.com. You can check out myself as Scott Criscolo on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, home of great interviews, our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews, and WWE Network live watches. If you need your fix of current wrestling talk, we have plenty of options for you, including the main event, featuring a roundtable discussion led by PTBN analysts and special guests, WrestleChat.net Still Real to Us podcast with Jeff Peck, and Wrestling with Optimism, which focuses on what we should be excited about in the world of wrestling today. Also, be sure to relive wrestling's past with Graham Cawthon's excellent exclusive History of Wrestling podcast. Sports fans have plenty to dive into as well. We feature The Extra Point with Scott Criscolo and Dr. G, as well as the twice-weekly Bauer Show, The Kings of Sport, featuring live audio wrestling's godfather, Nate Milton, The Sports Lounge, hosted by Cowboy and Cowboy Sr., often visited by special guests from inside the world of sports, as well as the NBA Team Podcast with Adam Murray and Andrew Reich for the deep dive into the world of pro hoops. As mentioned, all of these shows are available on PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. PTBN is also the home to tremendous in-depth features on pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, and more. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, Scott Keats' RSPWFAQ.com blog, and Piledriver.net for their support.
Chad, do you want your wrestling podcast to be informed by historical and analytical insight and by obsessive watching of footage from any era and any promotion and for them all to be available on one feed?
Sure do, Parv.
Chad, are you ready to shill?
I am, because I know you're talking about the Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation Podcast Network.
Nothing. Let's go through that again. PWOPTBN Podcast Network.
Got it. That's where you can listen to all sorts of different shows covering the history of pro wrestling in detail.
Shows like Titans of Wrestling with my boys Pete, the man of a 10,000 discs, and Kelly, the jobber lover.
I'm a jobber lover.
Pro Wrestling Super Show with Stephen Graham.
Join me, Stephen Graham.
The smash hit wrestling game show Brainbuster with
Johnny Sorrow.
We have a host of top contributors like wrestling historian Chris Zellner.
Hello, everyone. This is Chris Zellner here, starting a new podcast venture.
And the Pro Wrestling Only admins, the man who knows more about 90s wrestling than maybe anybody on earth, Charles, and good old Will from Texas.
This is Will, and I'm joined today by my good buddy Charles.
Whether it's the territories, WWF, NWA, Mid-South, Texas, Portland, tag team wrestling, Japanese wrestling, lucha, old school, new school, we got it.
And of course, the feed still has the mothership itself,
where the big boys play,
on which we continue our endless journey through WCW Supercards.
PWO PTBN Podcast Network. It's pro wrestling only.
You know you want to hear it.
Well, folks, welcome back to the Sports Lounge. Hope you enjoyed the break. After that fantastic Deflategate discussion, we're ready to head right into the next biggest sports story going on now, which is the NBA playoffs, which I, for one, have really enjoyed watching.
You know, Cowboy, I know you've been battling some issues tonight. You look like you've lost a little bit of weight, like you've deflated a bit from going to using the restroom so much.
It's very funny, very funny. I have deflated it. If you say restroom again, I'm going to have to excuse myself. So,
all right, we'll talk NBA.
So I had my little quick tangent to explain. I had my 5-year-old nephew for the day, Ryder. We've mentioned him many times here on the show. If you're listening, buddy, Uncle loves you. But we had a good time. Slept over last night. You got to skip school and hang out with me for the day. So we played a lot of Minecraft on the PS4. Went and played some mini golf. But he eats real healthy at home, so it's like a special treat when he's hanging out over here. So we did a McDonald's breakfast, Burger King lunch, followed by a 5 out of 5 spicy pad Thai dinner for me. Which that combination has not been good. I've had to run to the bathroom and drop numerous Goodells. So
I had some delicious Brussels sprouts for dinner.
Did you really?
Yeah. Nice. Brussels sprouts are the best.
I don't think I've eaten a Brussels sprout in 15 years. It's probably why I haven't grown.
I'm going to make you some. They're really good.
Excellent. Excellent. We'll week 6, Jets, Pats, over some Brussels.
Oh, some Brussels. I'm going to have a boneheads, put them on the menu. Deep fried. Perfect. With buffalo sauce and cheddar cheese.
A side of cinnamon toast crunch.
Yes.
All right. So like I said, NBA playoffs have been great. Justin, have you been watching?
Yeah, best I can. A lot of my nights with all my commitments here for the site are spent watching old wrestling for different various reviews. But I've tried to follow as much as I can with the advent of the great iPad and phone devices. When the games are on ESPN, I can throw them up on the Watch ESPN app. I've gotten lucky a couple nights where my wife has passed out with the TV on, so when I go to bed, I can leave the game on for a while there when she was still pregnant. She couldn't have the TV on. It would bother her. So it was really killing me because I like to fall asleep with the TV on. So it's coincided nicely with the playoffs beginning that I've been able to sneak in with the TV on as I fall asleep. So, yeah, I've watched a decent amount. I've been able to at least catch like the end of all these close games because thanks to like we've talked about a lot tonight with social media, I'll be alerted or through our chats because we have various fans of these teams still going on. So whenever the Hawks are down to the buzzer, Chad Campbell gets all ornery in the chat. So that triggers me to go put the TV on quickly and see what's going on. I think they've been exciting. I think it's cool that the none of the teams remaining have never won. Is that what it is? Who is this? Washington, Atlanta, Memphis, Golden State. Well, Houston's won, obviously, right? Is that of the other teams? None of them have, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. So Cleveland's gotten there before.
Yep, they have. Got swept.
Never been able to get over the hump. Yeah, so we're going to go. This is a tried and true tradition here at Place to, God, I'm sorry. Here at Place to Be Nation. Even though you'll probably listen to this like 3 or 4 days from now, the Warriors just went up 63-58 with 5 minutes left in the third quarter. it gave six in Memphis. So, yeah, so the play, I don't have the same family obligations as Justin. I have a very, very understanding wife who also, she does not let me sleep with the TV on. She broke a 30-year habit of mine of sleeping with the TV on. So now we don't even have the TV in the room. Because
now you
I
just don't sleep in the same room, so it's okay.
I would be too tempted to turn it on. So I actually...
That sounds brutal.
I have an iPad and I've started reading books before bed, and that's fine. That works for me. But I stay up late, so I pretty
like
much
a
have
house
watched...
on the prairie over there.
I've watched... Yep.
You read it by candlelight?
On my Kindle. but no, so I've watched a lot of these. I'm a... You know, big NBA fan, and yeah, the playoffs have been really, really exciting. It's been great. So tonight was probably, I mean, you don't get a more exciting finish to a series than what we had tonight. Washington down game six, down big, tie it up, end out down three with 6 seconds left. Pierce hits about what seems like his 100th big shot of a series.
This was the most absurd one.
Falling away off a 1 foot. Falling out of bounds from the corner.
Now you know
three.
What it's like watching you shoot too, and you think that you wonder why we say they're lucky. Like that's what it looks like. What Pierce was doing tonight.
Well, both of our records speak for themselves.
Yes. Well, he lost, so I don't...
No clock out on Flanagan Court. I have much time as I need to get it up. But yeah, I mean it's swish, and I mean he didn't get it off by a tenth of a second. It was on his fingertips at zero, and the Hawks move on. And the Hawks are going to be playing Cleveland, who, impressively, you know, I'm not a big LeBron guy. I'm happy he went back to Cleveland, but just the playoffs have brought out my anti-LeBron feelings. But without Kevin Love, I really felt the Bulls would beat them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you say, with a healthy Gasol, would the Bulls have beaten them? And I think maybe. But without Kevin Love and with Kyrie Irving at about 50%, for them to win that series in six was impressive.
The Bulls sealed their feet on Sunday when they blew that big lead and lost a really tough loss with the LeBron, you know, charge, and then he came down and hit the big shot at the end. I mean, that was to me the game that really just completely turned the series. They would have been up.
Oh yeah,
yeah. I mean, that was to me that's what did it.
Yeah, it was a huge shot. I don't know how you let him get the ball right there, but, you know, leave Mozgov open or whoever. Just don't let LeBron James shoot it when there's only, you know, I mean, it's...
But everyone says he's a choker and isn't clutch.
Everyone says he's what?
A choker and isn't clutch, which is nonsense.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah, it is. I mean, he's... A lot of those stats, I mean, a lot of those clutch, not clutch things... Are especially the guys who they say aren't clutch. I mean, he's had moments at the end of games where he hasn't been great. He's had as his career's gone on, he's gotten better.
And well, that's like anyone. I mean, you're going to develop the skills you need as you get older. I think part of it too is, you know, not just that. It's also guys that have a lot of reps. The numbers are going to be skewed. I mean, when you have as many big games as he's been in, I mean, the Cavs almost immediately were a playoff team with him, right? So, I mean, he's just been in a lot of big series. And for a long time, he didn't have a lot of help. So it's really hard to count some of those early, early ones against him too much. To me, as soon as he had a team around him and kind of was able to take on a different role, he's been pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, to me, with the clutch thing, it's going to be glaring either way for me to give any credence to it. So I'll give you some examples. So guys who were not clutch, proven not clutch, two come to mind right off the top of my head. You have Chris Webber, Karl Malone.
Yep.
Okay. Third baseman for the Yankees.
Yeah.
Just, All right. So, and that's not just not coming through in the clutch. I mean, that's like outright choking.
Right. Those guys,
Chris Webber, go back and watch those Kings games. The guy did not want the ball in the fourth quarter. He just didn't want it. I mean, it probably goes back to Michigan and calling the timeout. The guys who are clutch, I mean, obviously, right at the top of that list is Michael Jordan, right? Elevated his game. Seemed to always make the big shots. And, I mean, I don't put Paul Pierce too far behind him in that category. But, I mean, you know, at his advanced age, if you need someone to take that shot at the end of a game, even at his advanced age, I can't think of three or four guys in the league I would want more than him taking it.
No.
Yeah. But he just – it's amazing. I mean, it is. I mean, to be able to consistently do that is amazing. And love Paul Pierce. Have you caught a lot of negative Paul Pierce stuff out there though recently?
Well, the Celtics, and this is from someone that was a brief Celtics fan. I saw both sides of this, right? So I'm a basketball nomad. I've said this many times on these shows. I was a big Hornets fan growing up. The team got destroyed, sent to New Orleans, and I bailed. And since then, I've never really had a team. So when the Celtics drafted Ryan Gomes from Providence, I became a Celtics fan, and it happened to coincide a couple years later. Unfortunately, they traded Gomes, but I stuck with them. And, you know, they got Garnett and Pierce and Allen, and they went on and won a title. And a couple years later is when I think a lot of it started to turn. And it was during that, the year with the Lakers, they became really unlikable. Rivers seemed to bitch more. KG was even more of a dick than he always had been. Pierce was always grousing. Rondo was an asshole. Like, you know, they traded Perkins. Things seemed to turn, and it kind of drove me away because I'm kind of like, I don't know if I want to root for these guys anymore. They kind of seem like a bunch of dickheads. And I think Pierce was probably the least of all of them, but he kind of just gets remembered, I think, from those Garnett years, where Garnett is one of those guys that, you know, you hear all the time. He's on your team. You love him. He's against you. You're going to hate him. And I think Pierce just gets lumped in with that whole group.
Yeah. I think a lot of people remember that the finals game where he got carried off and then KG came back like 8 minutes later. But and KG, I mean, I can attest to that. So I was I sat courtside for a Celts game back when KG was on the T-Wolves, and literally courtside, best seats. My girlfriend at the time worked at a Carvel ice cream, and the owner had these seats. I don't know how.
It's not the place I would have expected you to say that would have.
No, exactly. I don't know what the hell this guy was doing on the side. But I sat right next to Tony Batiste's personal trainer and talked to him the whole game. But yeah, Garnett, just he did not shut up the whole game. I mean, just yap, yap, yap. I mean, F this, F that. I think Shamon Williams is his fucking cousin. And he yelled at him the whole game. And Pierce, right in front of us, Pierce dunked right on Garnett at the end. And it was awesome. And I walked away from that game saying, I despise Kevin Garnett. He's my least favorite player in the NBA. But once the Celts traded for him, that attitude he has, you look at it a lot differently, right? You don't look at it like he's an asshole.
AJ Pierzynski?
No, I mean he's by all accounts just an asshole.
It's more like David Ortiz, who just whines after every play. That's probably a better comparison.
That's bitches about every call. Tim Duncan, maybe is a better comparison.
Did you see this free throw disparity in this game?
What this
Memphis,
Memphis
has
game?
23 and Golden State has 3. Is that possible? With a minute,
yeah, because Golden State they shoot threes the whole game. It's like,
seems crazy though.
You know, it's like how many free throws would I get if we shot them versus Mike? You know,
yeah, there's a couple ways to look at that. Moving beyond that,
when Garnett comes to your team, instead of looking at it as he's just a prick, you look at it as a guy who, you know, who raises the level of everybody else by just hyper competitive, you love the intensity that he brings. And that's why it was so sad to see those guys in Brooklyn, with neither one of them wanting to be there. Like, it was awful. Like, I'm so happy for Pierce that he ended out in this situation where he could, you know, that's what he was supposed to do in Brooklyn, was help a young team, but they were just such a fucking mess that it didn't, right, it didn't work. But he's really doing that for the Wizards. But it's a, you know, like you said, the social media things just sucks sometimes. So after he hit the big shot to win the game, and he had that great quote that everybody loved, right? Where was it, the, you know, the Uber Christian there, Chris Broussard. Did you call bank, Paul? I called game, and everybody loved it.
Yeah.
And then he hits the same kind of shot in the last game to put him up. And right in front of everybody, he stands in front of the Hawks bench and goes, series. Which is a little, you know, it is. Same kind of thing. And everybody's killing him for it. And Paul, you know, Paul,
well,
Paul
because they lost. If they won, no one says anything.
Agreed. But they that's lost. Just who he is. And, it makes and him I mean, stupid. That's
all. It just kind of makes him look like, well, dumbass. Everyone's always looking for a reason to tear someone down. So when you say something like that and then lose, it's just easy pickings. And right. Then it happened again tonight. He hits the shot. He's, you know, stomping around the court, and then it was too late. So it was an amazing shot. I mean, it's still insane that he hit it. But I was torn that whole series because, again, one of the fun parts of being an NBA nomad, I can just kind of enjoy games and root for teams by the game in a way. And I've been torn on this series because I'm very anti what the population like believes. And I always wanted to be proven wrong. I think that's why I've always defended A-Rod and stayed behind him, because I've wanted to just prove people wrong. And I want the Hawks to do the same. Like, I'm so tired of hearing Atlanta's going to choke. When it comes to the big games, Atlanta's not going to win. Atlanta sucks. Atlanta, no one wants to see Atlanta in the championship. It's fool's gold. They're not really this good. And I feel like they weren't really giving them the credit they deserve for being really good during the season. And on the flip side, I liked this Washington team. Like, I like that they have a really stupid coach and that all of a sudden he's able to flip it around and become really good somehow. And I like, you know, Pierce hobbling his way up and down the court and hitting these big shots. And I like John Wall. So I've really been going back and forth because I feel real bad. These are like two tortured NBA franchises that you kind of root for to make it this far, because they never get this far. So, you know, and Washington just had a brutal week with the Caps folding and then this. On the flip side, I'm rooting for Atlanta now in the next round for the same reason, because I'm tired of everyone saying, okay, well, this is where they were going to get, but they're not going to go make it much further. But I'm also kind of rooting for LeBron because of people like you that just irrationally hate him and crap on him. And I didn't root for him on the Heat stuff. I just, because I don't like the Heat. I don't like Pat Riley. And I just don't like the way they went about that whole thing. But I feel like when teams do the right thing, when guys do the right thing, I like to see him be rewarded. So, like, I think him go back to Cleveland was a sign of good faith. So, like, part of me wants to see him finally take the title back there. Like, I feel like those people have suffered enough. So I'm really torn going into these conference finals about which of these two guys I want to win.
Looping me in with them. I went on about a 15-minute rant about how much I thought what LeBron did going back to Cleveland was a good thing. No. I'm not a hater.
You just said my LeBron hate came out.
Yes. It's all not right. The hate, not hate like you're talking about, though.
Yeah, but still, not you're like rooting your against him in this series, right? And you really have no reason to.
I am. I mean, I'm a big Celtics fan. And I mean, Paul Pierce and him are like arch enemy. I mean, I know, it's tough to.
It's good for the league if he wins. It's good for the league if Cleveland wins.
I don't know. It's good for the league if Cleveland gets. I mean, Cleveland Golden State's the matchup, right? That's the one that.
Oh, they're crapping themselves at Memphis Atlanta. Trust me. Did you not want that?
That's the matchup everybody wants. I think Golden State would beat them in five. Would be my guess. So let's talk about the Atlanta Cleveland matchup. I like Atlanta in the series, not as a rooting thing from a basketball standpoint. If Irving was healthy and they had Kevin Love, I would think Cleveland would have a better chance. Atlanta beat them 3 out of 4 this year when they had those guys. Atlanta really hasn't played well in the playoffs. I mean, if you watch them during the season, they were a different team. I mean, you saw some of it tonight. I mean, they played well until the end tonight. But for some reason, I feel like even though they haven't played well, they played well enough to win. And I think against LeBron and a lot of the stuff you talked about, that they're the number, they're the one, and no one's going to give them a chance to win. I think they elevate. And if, I mean, if they play the way that they played through 90% of the regular season, they'll win the series in five or six games. But I like them. I like them in six. I think. I mean, it's a tough matchup for Cleveland. They don't really. I mean, Millsap's a tough matchup. Horford stretching the defense with his jump shooting gets a guy like Mozgov or Tristan Thompson away from the basket. Korver can match J.R. Smith's, you know, just very good. I mean, Korver's the best 3-point shooter in the league. Jeff Teague's a good point guard. I think DeMarre Carroll's going to give. He's a really, really good defensive player, and I think he's going to give LeBron all sorts of problems. Atlanta's second unit. I mean, Schroeder's playing great, and Cleveland, I mean, it's Cleveland's bench is pretty weak. So
I think in games like this too, in series like this, when the teams are both really good, I think you almost have to look to who has the person or people more likely to fuck it up. And you really wonder what's going on with Blatt and all that nonsense. Like, is he more likely to screw things up for Cleveland than anyone on Atlanta? Like, I think Bergholz is obviously a very good coach. What he's done there, and you know, turn this team around into being the best team in the league. You know, is he more steady and less likely to do something dumb to cost his team the game? On the reverse side, though, is LeBron enough to offset who was clearly an overmatched coach in Blatt?
Yeah, I mean, LeBron, I think, pretty much coaches the team.
Right. But is there enough there for him to find a way to screw things up?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's an X's and O's thing. I mean, I think if there's a bunch of nail-biter games, that favors Cleveland because of LeBron's experience that we talked about, whereas basically, I mean, nobody on the Hawks has experience at that kind of pressure. It's just an X's and O's thing for me. I mean, the Hawks, when they're right, are a real offensive juggernaut. I mean, they're very, very good offensively. And Cleveland, the dirty little secret about the Cavs is that they suck on defense. Irving, even at full strength, I would put up 20 points on Irving, and I mean that. He's the worst defensive point guard in the whole NBA. Losing Love actually helps them defensively because he's the worst defensive power forward in the NBA. But I just don't think – I see games 115-103, stuff like that, and I just don't think LeBron – I mean, for Cleveland to win this series, LeBron's going to have to average like 40-10. And I just – I mean, I think it's too much to ask of the guy.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it too just depends on Irving's health now. You know, I mean, if he's really banged up and can't go at even 75%, I mean, that's a big loss. And like you said, they're already soft depth wise anyway. Atlanta runs much deeper, so I think it'll be a fun series. You know, like I said, I'm torn, so I probably won't really root for a side. I'll just hope for good games, and I'll probably be content with whoever advances. I mean, for LeBron's legacy, I think it'd be cool if he does it for Cleveland. But maybe this isn't his year anyway. The Golden State's just too good.
If they do it, it's his most impressive championship.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I don't even think that's really close.
No.
I mean, because the supporting cast there. I mean, Irving's very good, but I think, I mean, you saw what Cleveland was when Kyrie Irving was their best player. Basically, the worst team in the league, and I mean, that's pretty much the team you got out there. With LeBron, right? And so for them to if they can pull it off and win it, I mean
I think in ways you can argue that LeBron's 07 run where they got swept by the Spurs was more impressive than his Heat title.
when Mo Williams was the second best
Eric
player
Snow,
on the team.
I mean those teams were awful, and I mean he dragged that team to the NBA finals, and that Spurs team was really good that year, so it wasn't a shock they got swept. But I think you could argue that was more impressive than his title as Miami, just because of the level of talent.
Yeah. I mean, it's still, you know.
I know. Title's a title, but.
Title's a title. The team, the Spurs team, the Heat beat, was really good.
Yeah, no, they were. But the Heat had a lot of talent.
And, yeah, I mean, they did. And that LeBron tried to give away that game six. Ray Allen wouldn't let it happen. You know, always need a Celtic to pull you out of the fire. But so looking over to the West, real interesting stuff in the West. So Golden State's pulling away here. It looks like they're you know, barring some type of offensive outburst from the Grizzlies, which doesn't happen, you know, more than once a year.
Yeah. Good season for Memphis, though. I mean, they had a great year.
Yeah, I love that team. I mean, I thought they were, you know, I think they gave Golden State more trouble than people thought. I mean, those two have, the way the league is now, if you have the like two big guys like that, it's such an advantage. So good with Gasol and Zebo. Big Zebo supporters here on the lounge.
Obviously a good coaching switch for them. I know there's a lot of questioning when they bounced Hollins.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's worked out. I mean, they're a good team, and they're built where they'll be back.
Is Hollinger, you know, still there?
Yes. Yes. You can tell John Luer is on the roster. The Hollinger special. What they tried to do by acquiring Jeff Green, I mean, what the glaring weakness on that team is, they need like a slashing type scorer, like a scoring two or three. They had Rudy Gay, who regressed a lot when he was there, and then wanted max money, so they got rid of him. But they brought Jeff Green in. But I mean, Jeff Green is too inconsistent. Courtney Lee starts for them. He's not a great two guard by any stretch. I mean, the situation is so bad that Vinny Carter gets big minutes at 75 years old. And I mean, if they can add that one piece. You know, guy like a Klay Thompson type of guy, you know, someone quite as good as Klay, but, you know, even like J.R. Smith would be fantastic for them. Something like that. I think they could definitely make a move next year. So the other series is really interesting because the way the Clippers were playing, I really, really thought that they would have a chance against Golden State.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when they were up 3-1, it looked like, I mean, they had completely dismantled the Rockets. But in true Clippers fashion, they have put themselves on the brink of disaster here. So up 19 with 3 minutes left in game six at home, and to blow that lead with Harden, Harden pretty much didn't play. I mean, he didn't play basically in the fourth quarter. To blow that lead to Josh Smith and Corey Brewer and now face a game seven on the road where, I mean, I believe it's about 20%. The road team wins to about 20% at game sevens. And, I mean, traditionally in the NBA, it's the toughest. And, man.
I feel like as fans, too, we can't lose because Clippers-Warriors, you get all the bad blood. They hate each other. Super fun series up and down the court. And then Houston, you get the Harden versus Curry thing, right? So you get the two guys that were then rumored to be the MVPs or, you know, the top of the MVP race. So I think either way, we're going to get a couple fun series out of it, you know, or a couple fun games, I should say.
If Houston wins, I think the Warriors will sweep them.
Most likely.
If the Clippers win, I give them a real chance. Just based on matchups. I mean, if you look at what bothered the Warriors in this series, it was the big guys down low, and I think Dwight Howard's a shell at this point. And I mean, I don't think he would give them a whole lot of trouble. I mean, that team's based around, I mean, Harden's that whole team, and they don't play a lot of defense. So I mean, the Warriors would score about 150 points a game.
All right, so do this. So we got five teams ostensibly left because the Warriors look like they have this one. And I mean, they hit half-court shots and everything else. It ranked to me the best to worst to best of potential to win the title of these five.
Of the four? I mean, the Warriors are going to win. We should leave Memphis out of it.
No, five.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes,
Clippers,
you're right.
Houston. Yes. So of the five, give me worst to best chance to win the title, and then give me your, you know, worst to best matchups for the finals.
Okay, so chance to win the title, Golden State, the Clippers. Cleveland, Atlanta, Houston, which I know flies in the face of what I said. So that's based on matchups for me. So I think if the Clippers play Golden State, they have a legitimate chance to beat them. And then I think they match up real well to either team coming out of the East.
Yep.
I think Golden State basically destroys Atlanta, destroys the Rockets. I think the Clippers would destroy Atlanta. I think Cleveland, Golden State, if that matchup happens, I give Cleveland a chance. And it's based on more intangible stuff than X and O stuff. And I think a lot of it is Golden State. If that series happens, it's going to have that feel of the kind of like a boxing match where the Cavs, even though they've never won anything, where the Cavs are like the incumbent champion because they have LeBron, mm-hmm. and Golden State's going to be is the upstart trying to take that title from them, trying to be historically good. And you just never know in those type of series.
Is there a chance too with, say the Cavs get by the Hawks in five or whatever, and then the Clippers and Warriors, this bloodbath goes seven. I mean, there's a chance too they just wear them down mentally, and set up Cleveland or Atlanta if they can get through their series. Like, I think there's more potential for the Warriors to maybe just get banged up going through this series with their rivals that could go seven games.
Right, I totally agree with that too. Now, if you ask me what's gonna happen, Houston's going to beat the Clippers because they're the Clippers, and they completely blew it. It's really tough to win a game seven on the road. Harden, very, very good. Houston wins a close game at home. The Warriors sweep Houston. Atlanta beats Cleveland in six. The Warriors beat Atlanta in five, and they go down in the books as having that historically good team with that historically good playoff run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's my prediction.
That's the team I'm rooting for in all this is Golden State. I feel like they're the best team all year, and I like to see it when the best team wins. So, as much as I talked about LeBron's legacy and the Hawks shutting up the media, I think the Hawks just getting to the finals would shut up a lot of what the people were saying, because I don't think anyone gave them a chance to get that far. So if Atlanta gets by Cleveland and then Golden State kills them, I don't think it hurts Atlanta at all. I think it hurts LeBron either way. I think unless LeBron wins the title, people are going to dump on him. Regardless,
which is a joke.
Of course it is.
Even if they lose to Atlanta, it's a joke.
No one looks at Atlanta as a legitimate team. So the majority of fans outside of, people like you that follow closely and understand how good the Hawks are, or, guys like Chad that are Hawks fans and understand how good they really are, I think you're going to get, you're going to say, oh, he can't even beat the fucking Hawks, this papered team that's not even that good, and he's LeBron James. He can't even get by them to get to the championship. I think we'll hear a lot of that.
I think you're right. I mean, and it'll be completely unfounded.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, if they get swept and he plays like shit or something, yeah.
But the odds of that are low. I mean, I don't think he'll play like shit.
I mean, but the way I see that series going is him carrying Cleveland completely on his back, but still losing in six. I mean, it's tough to fault a guy.
Yeah, they find ways. you'll see it. You'll see it. They were ready to do it against Chicago in that series. They were burying them already, and they won the game.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, Cleveland is they're favored to win that series. So I think the most fun finals would be Golden State Cleveland from a watchability perspective and from a legacy and all the stuff we love to talk about perspective. But
Clippers Cleveland is fun. Only because of the tortured franchise aspect, these two long time loser franchises. One, it's almost like the Atlanta Washington series. Like one of them finally has to win and get to the finals, conference finals. It'd be like that here. Like, will the Clippers actually win a fucking NBA title, or can Cleveland finally get a world championship?
Yeah, and you have Doc against LeBron again, right. which is a built in storyline. And then the Clippers games. Clippers are fun to watch because Chris Paul's so good. And Griffin and Jordan are flying around. And then Griffin has just, for whatever reason, he seems to really piss off the other team. Like, I mean, people take cheap shots at him left and right, so there's always like a couple of little fights. So we can hope for that. Like, I mean, I can't wait. If the Clippers win, I'm so looking forward to Griffin against Draymond Green. Because Draymond Green, he's like new age Garnett. He just does not shut up the whole game, and he's demonstrative, and he's causing trouble. So my prediction would be that they get into it within like the first 5 minutes of game one of the series. And
yeah, I mean, it's best for the league if the Clippers win. I mean, to have LA there, and I think it's a better series. More storylines, more hate, more animosity. I think it's better. As big of a star as Harden is, and you know, name wise, Howard is, even if he's not there physically anymore. I think
he's still good, but it's just
he's not Dwight Howard anymore.
Well, the other thing, I mean, they just match up so much better to Golden State. I mean, Houston doesn't have anybody who can guard Curry. Mm. I mean, that's a big fucking problem when you're playing Golden State. Whereas the Clippers, it's Curry against Paul, the two best point guards in the league.
Right.
You know what I mean? And
Memphis is making this a game, by the way, so might not be over yet.
I hope so. I love Z-Bo. As everything we're saying, I would kill for a Z-Bo Hawks.
come on. Golden State, the best team all year. They deserve it.
I know. Yeah, you know, and that's how the NFL went. So I'm with you.
I don't think these guys are cheating.
Hey, I mean, Steph Curry, he does some stuff with that basketball.
So wanted to quickly talk about Simmons leaving ESPN. Any thoughts there?
I'll follow, like Christopher Moltisanti says about Tony. I'd follow that man into hell.
Big Simmons ball washer.
Huge Simmons ball washer, admittedly. So, I started reading Bill. I call him Bill because I feel like we're friends. Because I have met him briefly. So I started following him when he had his Boston Sports Guy website. So before he was at ESPN, someone turned me on to the website. I was about 20 years old. And I mean, everything I read about the guy, I mean, it was just like the stuff he wrote about was everything. I mean, it was like, I mean, I was like, I was looking in the mirror, you know, big Boston sports guy. I used to play Madden like crazy. And he would write like four columns a year about Madden. And I mean, you know, he's into tennis. Like, I mean, all this. I mean, it was surreal. I mean, so followed him all through ESPN, and I could see why some people don't like him. But as a Boston fan, I mean, this is going to sound horrible, but I mean, he's had like four or five of his articles have like literally brought me to tears. He wrote a piece when Antoine Walker came back to the Celtics. So Twan had left and come back, and I mean, he's writing for a national outlet, and I mean, Antoine Walker was a pretty big star, but I mean, not a huge star. And he wrote this column about Antoine that was just fantastic. I mean, he really has a way of capturing what the Boston sports fan feels like.
Hathaway.
Right. Well, he's not going to be writing for a little while.
No, but I mean, even I feel like since he became more immersed in the LA stuff, the Hollywood scene and all his other stuff, like, I feel like that slipped. Like, I do really feel like he still has the pulse of Boston sports.
I mean, when he writes about Boston sports, yes.
Yeah.
Like the stuff he writes about.
Old or current?
Both. Like, I mean, writing about them.
So my problem is this: great storyteller, great basketball guy. Everything else is ham-fisted or forced into these buckets of theories and comparisons that sometimes work and a lot of times don't. And my beef with him started to become everything had an excuse or reason. And there was a whole stretch there where, like, no accountability, right? So he'd have a bad season picking games. And even if it's true, it just comes across as so stupid. Like, oh, you know, I've been on this book tour, and it didn't hit me that the Vikings were playing all these home games in the first month. It's like, come on. You know, no one saw that. It was just, like he'd do this wording where it was like, oh, I would have seen this if I would have thought this. And it's just like, no, you didn't see it because you know, you've lost your touch a little bit when it comes to football because you're stretched so thin. And God bless him. You know, he's made billions probably out of, you know, nothing. So, well, whatever. He was a rich kid growing up. But you know what I'm saying? He's built his career up and made himself into, you know, the most powerful guy in sports media is the big lead did their list the other day. And God bless him. He's done a hell of a job. But I don't think that means everything he writes is great. I don't think that means everything he touches is gold. And I thought it bled into some of the writing at Grantland from other people. Like, you know, I voiced my thoughts on The Masked Man more than once as kind of the voice of the wrestling fan on a mainstream outlet and what that means and kind of the way he's handled it. I thought he's kind of trended closer to Simmons' writing more than he should have, and I think it's hurt him. So I think Simmons has a style that can work for him. I think he's a great interviewer. Like, I think his podcasts were always really good. So I think he's got a good touch of getting guys to be comfortable and to open up and be friendly and talk about what they want to talk about. Like, he's really good at that. I think when he's, you know, one of his famous things is stay in your lane. I think when he stays in his lane, he's good. I think when he's out of his lane, he thinks he's good, and maybe he's not.
Yeah, and I mean, I think, you know, the least favorite stuff of his for me is like the football picks that you talked about. I think it's give it. How do I say this? I think he does that because he can. Do you know what I mean? Because it's clearly not like the most well thought out. You know, I mean, like Bill Barnwell on his site is, but you know, much more of an X and O's guy. I think he just does it because he's always done it. But yeah, that's my least favorite stuff that he writes.
But there was a stretch. I think he's past it now. But there was a stretch where he still acted like he knew what the hell he was talking about, and that was that's when he lost me. When he was still talking about baseball and some of the podcasts lost me a lot. And I mean, not of all of it's his fault. Like, you'd have Jack L on, who's like the worst Yankee fan in the history of Yankee fans, and that like just drove me insane. I couldn't even listen to it. I found myself just getting to the point where I'd only listen to the ones that Cousin Sal was on, like the Lions ones, and even then, I just started getting to have too many podcasts to listen to, so I kind of faded. So I think that just became a point where he just lost touch on those other subjects, but still acted like he had it, and then started blaming outside factors. You know, just I don't know. It just felt like he got to the point where he is now. I feel like now he admits that he's not as up on things for whatever, because he's stretched thin and he's busy. But I feel like there was a stretch in between where maybe he didn't realize it or was denying it, and that's when he lost me as a real fan.
I think you're being hard on the guy. We probably wouldn't be doing this right now if it wasn't for him. I think that's a pretty fair statement. And he's kind of done what you know, all of us who kind of do this for fun, right? If I had an ideal of what could this be for me, if I could just write down what this could be for me, starting from where I am right now. Wouldn't, and I think you too, wouldn't it be exactly what Bill Simmons has done?
Sure, but that doesn't mean I have to like his product.
No, it doesn't mean you have to like his product. Okay.
I said God bless him. I said he did a hell of a job. I mean, he made a career out of this. That's awesome. Like, he more than a career. He became a superstar from it. And made millions of dollars, works and lives in Hollywood. I mean, whatever. He did a hell of a job. That doesn't mean at some point along the way, I think he lost his fastball and other Simmonsism. I think it happens to everyone, but the problem is he doesn't always allow himself to realize he lost that and still tried to force a lot of it. And to me it just got overbearing to read and listen to. And you know, you said that we wouldn't be doing this without him, and in a way that's worked against him, because so much has come out that is either similar or like it. And because guys like Barnwell and these others are around that look at things in a different way, that speaks to me more. I feel like the proliferation of all these sites and podcasts has hurt him, because to me, once he lost that fastball and he was no longer the only guy in town, it made it easier to move away from him.
Sure. Sure. I mean, that's a fair point. I think wherever he ends up, he's going to make a You'll make a boatload of money. And hopefully, I mean, I think a lot of some of that loss of fastball. I mean, he's had these well-documented issues with the ESPN that, I mean, I loved what he said on the podcast that ultimately got him canned, basically, calling Goodell a liar.
Oh, sure.
I mean, to me, that you know, that is his fastball right there, right? And if he's not going to be in a medium where that's type of thing, I mean, how much has he had to hold back because of the corporate wishes at ESPN? So I hope wherever he ends up, they just give him the freedom to just pretty much just do whatever
it's
he
tough.
Wants.
I mean, I'm sure deep down he just wants to open his own site and do his own thing. But I mean, that's just going to kill a lot of his access and accessibility. And you have to wonder how many people will follow him there. I mean, a lot of the stories coming out over the last couple of days have been about how the Grantland traffic isn't really that great enough to justify his salary. So, you know, you wonder really who's going to follow him and where. We've seen guys strike out outside of ESPN on their own. We seen, like, remember, like, Max Kellerman left around the horn, bombed. And outside of Dan Patrick, how many other people have really left and done well?
Keith Olbermann.
Yeah. I mean, has he? He's been on like 15 stations and now he's back on ESPN. You know, Michelle Beadle didn't work for her. You know, there's been a lot that have left and not gone terribly well. So it'll be interesting if, you know, if he tries to go on his own. Now, I think the best landing spot for him, I mean, selfishly, as a Big East fan, I'd love to see him on Fox, but I don't see it happening because they don't have really an NBA presence right now. I think the best landing spot for him is Turner, which also owns Bleacher Report. So they can give him a sub-site of Bleacher Report.
He's destroyed Bleacher Report like a number of occasions in his columns.
Well, but maybe he can say, well, I'm here to fix it.
I mean, he like points out how they all the stuff they do to just generate clicks.
Of course. They suck. I've told you that before. But
so listen, I mean, I don't want to speak for speak for site leadership, but Bill, if you're looking for a home,
yes,
placetobenation.com.
You can run it. We'll kick Brad out.
We'll let you do whatever you want. I mean, literally, whatever you want. Yeah. We'll call it the Sports Lounge featuring Bill Simmons. I'll give you the hosting gig.
And Senior will have to be part of it, though. No, I think Simmons, the tournament makes the most sense to me, though, because of the NBA ties. And, like, that's his specialty. That's his wheelhouse. Turner's such a big family of networks. He could still maybe do his documentaries and find a home for them. Bleacher Report's really grown. You know, it's a far cry from – it's still, I don't think it's still the best site or the best place, but it's better than it was years ago.
SI, too. But SI's got – you know, they kind of – I don't want to say copied Grant, but they just gave Peter King.
Right.
He's got his own site now. Awesome. And so – I don't know. I mean, I don't know if he'll go to – he doesn't seem like the type who's going to go to the highest bidder, though.
I don't think so. I don't think he needs to. But that's what leads me to think he may go somewhere like Turner because of the access. Like, he can still be really in tight with the NBA stuff.
He could probably get on that show.
Well, there's rumors, too, that Barkley's done.
Kenny Smith and Shaq, he would love that.
Well, there's rumors that Barkley's done because he wants to get into politics. So he might be gone after next year anyway. I read his contracts up. So, I mean, Simmons slotting in would make a lot of sense. Fox just doesn't have any NBA. So unless Fox picked up the NBA, I don't see him going there. You know, and then there's a few other spots here and there. But I don't know. I don't see him doing it alone. I think he needs to go somewhere that has the access and then some kind of structure behind it. I think if he just opens his own site. And I mean, I guess he could open his own site and try and poach some people from Grantland. I mean, I think Grantland's going to streamline. I don't see them keeping on a lot of the pop culture stuff that he had going on. Like, I think maybe the Masked Man's the guy that eats it the worst on this. Like, I don't see why ESPN would keep a wrestling guy on. Like, to me, that was the Simmons thing. So I'll be curious how much of that aspect stays with Grantland, mm-hmm. if they keep it as is, or if they really whittle it down and make it more of a sports site.
Right. Right. And I mean, you don't know how much money he's made and what he's done with it. And I mean, he could be in a position where he's not, you know, where if he eats it for a few years, he doesn't care.
His salary is a dollar. I mean, he was making $5 million a year or so. So the question is, does he want to be a money mark? Like in the world of wrestling where these guys sink their money into these independent promotions. Does he want to sink his own money to build his own vanity site just to say it's his and do what he wants? Like, does he want to do that? Like, that costs money. I mean, you can't to run a site and, and build a staff like the way he'd want to do and try and get the access he wants to have and everything else, is it worth it? Or is it better off just going to a place that already has that infrastructure with maybe just a different leadership that would be a little bit more open?
Right. Well, wherever he goes, the Cowboys going to follow.
We'll be riding behind him.
Riding behind him, I have a signed copy, personalized signed copy of the Book of Basketball in my basement. I went to a book signing in Phoenix when I lived in Phoenix, wearing an authentic Paul Pierce jersey that would actually fit Paul Pierce. So I've worn it twice. I wore it once when Game 6 of the Finals, where they beat the Lakers, and I wore it to the Simmons book signing with it coming down to my knees, and I ended out on TV. And me and Bill talked Celtics a little bit, and from that day forward, special place in my heart. We're gonna have you on the lounge, Bill. So it's a goal of mine. One time. Justin feels the same way.
You better start with J-Bug and work your way up.
Very good. All right, well, fun having you on, Justin.
Yeah, it was a good time. Hopefully I'll be invited back.
Yeah, you're definitely, you know, you kept it cool. You didn't, you know, here on the lounge, we don't like those like extreme homer types of views, you know. We try to keep things right down the middle. I mean, Senior hasn't shown an ounce of bias in his whole life.
Bingo.
Keith. It's going to be good. So we're hoping to have Justin as a regular contributor around here. So please.
I don't know. Someone called me Poochie tonight, said I'm on all the shows, so I might have to scale back now, even though I founded all this. Maybe like that.
Hey, you don't have to get on your soapbox in here. I didn't call you anything.
What a jerk. Jordan Duncan.
Why don't you just go, you know, Mercedes over there is calling you over.
LaShawn, I believe, was the one that was allowed my way tonight.
It was.
There's so much wrong with that statement. I don't even know where to start.
Oh, we have to mention, yes. But before we go, this is, we're still on the Extra Point Sports Lounge Showdown Watch. Criscolo continues to push it back because he's afraid of me. I made one trip to their ice cream truck and haven't heard a peep out of him since. So anytime, Scott, I'm ready. Like I said, I don't need to prepare. I'm ready for you. Senior's been licking his chops to get Dr. G in the ring.
And I want Flanagan. I beat him on the court. I'm going to beat him in the sports lounge. He's on the show, right? Can we trade him there so I can argue with him?
Flanagan's a lounge guy. Mm-hmm. Flanagan's a lounge guy. I'm sorry. You can argue with
give me Chris. We'll see. Compete Chris. Over who can get the better blowjob on air.
There you go. And I know George was mentioning that, you know, him and Senior would duke it out and then have a beer. And Senior wanted me to let him know that he absolutely didn't want to have a beer with him. That it's all business. And he said, Senior, direct quote was, "Give me the biggest Yankee fan they got, and I'm going to make them cry." So,
well, this is how it should be, right? So you have the debate. If the lounge wins, the guys from the Extra Point have to come here and buy lunch at Boneheads for everyone. If they win, the lounge guys have to go down to the Knights of Columbus macaroni dinner in September and buy a bunch of tickets and raffle tickets and go to the macaroni dinner. That's what I think the trade-off is.
Hey, I'm up for whatever. I'm fully overconfident for this one, so you can make it, you know, make it whatever you want. That sounds great, Scott. I'll buy a ticket to the macaroni dinner anyway, you know, because Scott's my friend. But if you beat me, I'll even go eat the macaroni. There's that. So, all right, I think that's gonna do it.
Warriors win. Look at that, perfectly timed.
Warriors win, but you already know that because you're listening to this a couple days from now. So, Justin, great having you.
Yep.
For Justin, the Cowboy, and I'm out. Until next time.
Awful. You're still bad at the end.
What do you mean? I never got any guidance on that. I'm untrained here, man. I just come on here and talk. Bob Double, Mr. Double, Mr. Bob Double.
Mr. Dabalina. You thought you could manipulate, you thought you could fool me.
Ooh,
Mr. Dabalina. Cheech Wizard put me on a stuffer, then he schooled me. Prince could be fraudulent, just you wait and see. First he was my money grip, then he stole my honey dip. Mr. Dabalina is a serpent, don't you agree? The little two-timer resembles Aunt Jemima, with jeans and a dirty white hoodie. Seems like he wouldn't be a snake, or would he? Disguises come in all sizes and shapes. Notice the facade of the snakes. They all catch the baits, even though last year there was GQ. Took a lot of time before the DEL could see through the mask. All I had to do was ask the Emperor and Kwame, and my man responded, they were bombing. Fraudulent foe with the strength of Hercules. The way you're on my dick must really hurt your knees. You need to take heed and quit being such a groupie. Ever since I did a little show in Guadalupe, I never saw a groupie like you. But what is funny is you wanted to be down with my crew. But DEL is not down with any clowns of justice. So I would suggest that you try to impress Uncle Fester, Dabalina. Because you don't impress me, Dabalina. The style of dress is not the key, Dabalina. It's all in the mind and the heart, so you should start by remembering you gotta pay a fee, Dabalina.
Mr. Dabalina, Mr. Bob Dabalina. Mr. Dabalina, Mr. Bob Dabalina. Mr. Dabalina, Mr. Bob Dabalina. Mr.